Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys give you the review of the newest movie and, of course, our favorite picks and a little bit of box office and movie news. I'm your host, Mark the Moose Haas. I'm back after a short hiatus, and thank God I'm back because I listened to your guys' picks for 80s action comedies. And listen, not one of our fucking viewers knew what movie you guys were talking about. So,
first of all, I like that you said 80 action comedies. There are 80 action movies, B movies. But under a certain context, you could watch them as comedies.
It's a good thing I'm back, folks. Someone has to keep these two in line. That being said, we're going to talk about the box office as we always do. Interesting box office weekend. The Paw Patrol, the mighty movie, took number one with $22.7 million. Saw X, the 10th film in the Saw franchise, I think the 11th overall in that franchise, came in at number two with $18.3 million. Gareth Edwards, the creator, which we're going to review in our third segment, came out with $14 million at number three. The Nun 2, another week in the top five at number four with $4.7 million. The Blind, coming in at number five, maybe a bit of a surprise there with $4.3 million. A Haunting in Venice drops to number six with $3.6 million. Dumb Money, not doing great at the box office, $3.3 million. Just not making the money that you think a movie like Dumb Money probably should make. The Equalizer 3, coming in at number 8. The X4 Spendables? Expendables 4 drops to the 9th place with $2.7 million. 69% drop. And of course, somehow Barbie, which Barbie has figured out a way to make money, even though it's out for purchase and streaming, still in box office, still making $1.4 million. Gentlemen, you've heard the numbers. I did see The Expendables.
Yes.
I hate that I saw The Expendables.
I'm sorry, man.
That's my review.
We tried to warn you in the podcast.
I heard. And what? So as I was listening to the podcast, I was like, I got to tell these guys that I did actually take the time to see The Expendables. And yeah, it is hot garbage. It absolutely deserves to drop 70% in week number two. But JT, wow. You have heard the tale of the box office. My friend, what does it tell you?
Well, it tells me I was pretty off my prediction. I think I predicted a $50 million opening for The Creator. Sometimes you're in this little movie bubble when you're a film geek and you're on film Twitter and you just feel like, I don't know, every time I saw the trailer for The Creator in theaters, which happened a lot, they really advertised that film. Yeah. It felt like an old school big sci-fi blockbuster to me. And I guess I got caught up in that excitement feeling. So I really thought audiences were going to come out for this spectacle of what this movie would be. But apparently something did not connect with audiences in those trailers. I thought the Aerosmith song Dream On would have sold at least 20 million tickets, but to see it come in under 20 million at such a low number, I feel bad, but at the same time, the movie was only made for 80 something million dollars, which is insane because it looks like it was made for 200 million. So it might not have too much trouble getting its money back depending on worldwide, but I do think it's a bit of a disappointment for an original sci-fi action film, which is very dark. That's one thing I will say when we get to review. It's a much darker film. This isn't Independence Day or iRobot. You're not really going to go in there and have a good time. It is pretty rough around the edges and close to rated R at times, I would even say. So I don't know how word of mouth is going to do for it, but I'm curious to see how if it'll have legs at all.
Benny, tale of the box office. Did Paw Patrol paw its way into your heart this weekend?
I did not see Paw Patrol, but I was actually close to seeing it. So I have a young teen child, and like growing up, what they watched constantly was Paw Patrol and Octonauts. So I spent a good 4 years of my life watching Paw Patrol and Octonauts every day, whether or not I wanted to. And still, when they get like really sick or have a bad cold, they'll put on Paw Patrol and Octonauts, and, you know, it's their nostalgia thing. So I am not surprised that it did really well. I didn't even remember that it was coming out this week, but it doesn't surprise me that it doesn't do well. Like preteens right now, that's a nostalgia for them, and young little kids, parents wanting to get out of the house, like a movie made for a 4 or 5 year old, very few and far between, and it gets you out of the house as a young parent. So I am not surprised at all it did well. Saw actually came in pretty much where I predicted it. You know, last week's episode, I said it would make around 18 million, and that's right around where it came in. The Creator, I overshot it by 28. I did not think it was going to do amazing, but it did way worse than even I thought. Yeah. Having seen the movie, I'm not surprised that it did way worse than I thought. I think there's a limited scope of audience for the type of movie. Like generally, like non-IP attached sci-fi doesn't make a ton of movies and hasn't since the 1990s. So if you go back over the last 20 years, there's not a lot of original sci-fi movies that have burnt up the box office, at least not the pop in my head. So I'm not that surprised where it comes in. And, you know, people love The Conjuring. They keep showing up regardless of what critics and anyone else says about it. If it's a Conjuring movie, people are going to show up and it's going to make its $100 million and go home.
Yep, I agree with you. The Nun doesn't surprise me. It's came out at exactly the perfect time. It's the first movie to kind of kick off the horror season, so it makes perfect sense that that movie has pretty decent legs. And to your point, Benny, yeah, Paw Patrol, absolutely. That movie won't have tons and tons and tons of legs because I do feel like it made its money this weekend. It might make a little bit more over the next couple of weeks, but for the most part, people are definitely going to or that movie has kind of come and gone, and I think we've seen it. I mean, that movie was made for super cheap because if you look at like the graphics on things like the Paw Patrol, there's not a lot of money invested in like a CGI for that. So Saw X makes sense. Look, this is the 11th film in the Saw franchise. You know, we've seen it all year long. We see it with Expendables. We saw it with Fast X. Like, they're really squeezing and squeezing. I mean, if you were trying to squeeze the most out of a penny that you can possibly get at this point in time, that penny is so thin that the boogers have come out of Abe Lincoln's nose. Like, they are really trying to squeeze these franchises for the most that they can get out of it. Now, the Saw franchise is not for me. And we will have a guest on later, and JT and Amanda will go toe-to-toe and give their review of the Saw X movie. But these movies have never been for me, but they do have an audience. And obviously, you know, 11 movies into it, an $18 million release coming out, that's not bad for them. Good for them. I'm disappointed, actually, in The Creator. Now, it had an $80 million budget, and we'll talk about this in our review later on. Looking at the movie, it doesn't, you would feel like it's a $250 million budget. Like, my God, is it so beautifully done and visually striking. And the CGI in this movie is perfect. So it's crazy that it did not do very well. I agree with you too, JT. This movie is marketed like crazy. Every movie I've gone to for the past 6 months has had an ad for The Creator. But science fiction outside of, to Benny's point, outside of these tentpole franchises like Star Wars, like Marvel, is iffy. And you can really kind of name on one hand the successful sci-fi movies, a movie like Blade Runner. But even Blade Runner crashed and burned at the box office, but gained a following for years and years and years and years. Blade Runner 2049 crashed and burned at the box office for Denis Villeneuve, but again, is considered one of the best sci-fi sequels. And so it was a big swing. It's kind of a weird time to release a movie about friendly AI because there's so much discord in the world right now regarding artificial intelligence. And this movie does tend to get you leaning and rooting towards the artificial intelligence side. So I do think a lot of people are caught up in this, like, AI will destroy us. AI is going to take jobs. Like, right now, there's just a lot of discourse around AI. And then they release a movie called The Creator about artificial intelligence. So I also feel like the timing release of this movie would have absolutely killed if it had been released like in the early 2000s. If this movie had come out like late 90s, early 2000s, it would have opened up to $50 million weekend. So a little shocked by it. I like Gareth Edwards. We'll talk a little bit about that later. I do think Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie out there. And so far, I don't think he's made a bad movie. But again, we'll talk more about that later. The rest of it is...
Let me just add, even if you had like... I think one thing that was probably missing was an A-list star. I don't think John, you know, Washington David is really a household name yet. But, but look at Tom Cruise in Edge of Tomorrow. Also didn't do very well in the box office, but is a really good sci-fi film, which has since then become like a favorite of like sci-fi action films. So even when you have a superstar like Tom Cruise, I think original sci-fi films just have trouble breaking through to general audience. I'm curious to see if Crater will have a similar lifespan as to like movies like Blade Runner 2049, Edge of Tomorrow, and even another Tom Cruise movie, Oblivion. I know some people who really like Oblivion, but it did not do well at the box office, and you know it has its cult following.
I like Oblivion. Yeah, I'll say that. I love Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is my favorite sci-fi movie that's come out in the last 10 years.
The creator will definitely have nerds that are following it and talking about it from 10 years from now.
Okay.
And that, I don't think that is an issue. It's just, you know, there are only so many of humans like that that will go and see these movies. I don't think it's anything that has to do with the movie. It's just how many people are willing to do that.
I miss the 90s when Bruce Willis could star in a movie called Fifth Element, which looks insane, is weird as hell, and is a huge box office hit. Those were the days.
But hopefully by the end of this weekend, X4endables will be out of the top 10 and out of our minds forever. Moving on to a little fun movie news. Knowing that JTE is a huge action star, I wanted to talk about the Silent Night trailer. John Woo. Oh my God.
Yes.
Action legend himself, John Woo, has a new movie coming out with Joel Kinnaman about a father seeking revenge for the death of his child. It's called Silent Night. It looks like Christmas with guns and violence. From my take of the trailer, JT, I wanted to kick off with you because Woo has got to be in probably your top 10 of action directors, right?
I'll try top three, probably. Okay. I mean, John Woo, I discovered him when I was in high school at a time where my film geek brain was just beginning to grow. And I went down the John Woo, you know, rabbit hole. I've basically seen every movie he's made. He has not made a film like this in probably 20 something years. He did make a film in Hong Kong called Manhunt, but it had a lot of issues behind the scenes, low budget, and it felt like he was handcuffed a lot. It was an okay movie. But this does look like a return to John Woo, Hard Target, Face Off, Mission Impossible 2, Broken Arrow, kind of era John Woo. This happened to play in front of Saw X, and I had no idea it was going to play. I was like a kid on Christmas morning, just jumping up in my seat. I could not be happier to see this trailer. You know, my expectations are high, but I also know this is not going to have the same budget as like a Face Off. I do know that it is a smaller budget film, so I'm going to, you know, keep my expectations to a reasonable level, but man, love that trailer. Big fan of Joel Kinnaman. And yeah, there's a little bit of touches throughout that trailer. Then you throw in the Die Hard music. I mean, it looks fantastic.
Benny, did you get a chance to check out the Silent Night trailer?
I did see the Silent Night trailer. I do not share JTE's passion for John Woo films at all.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think Face Off is abysmal. And
My God.
And I think Hard Target is the reason that Jean-Claude Van Damme ended up getting relegated to the B team instead of being right up there with Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Wait, before we go any further, okay, have you seen like Hard Boiled, The Killer? Have you seen his Hong Kong films?
I've seen a couple of them. John Woo ain't my guy. I'm sorry, John Woo ain't my guy.
All right.
And
no comment.
Yeah, it's one of the movies we review, I'll be there begrudgingly. But otherwise, I'm not going to see it.
Okay. We are reviewing it. I'm putting that flag down right now.
Fair enough. I'll show up.
I actively root for Joel Kinnaman. I like Joel Kinnaman. I hope he continues to get better and better work. Like I hated him in the first Suicide Squad movie, and he was the best part of the second one. And so even though they killed him off, spoiler alert, listen, if you haven't seen the Suicide Squad by now, fuck it. I'm spoiling it for you. He dies. But this movie looks bonkers. Last year, one of my favorite movies was the David Harbour.
Violent Night.
Violent Night. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. I loved that movie. It was needlessly stupid and needlessly gory and aggressive, but I loved it. And for some reason, this movie struck the right chord for me. And I was like, okay, I'm in. Take my money. Let's go. I'm invested in Silent Night.
There has to be a 2-pack Blu-ray like a year from now where it's, you know, the 2-packs where it's just Silent Night, Violent Night, double feature for $9.99 at Walmart. It's going to happen. It's got to happen.
That is definitely right there up JT's alley. If you don't have that back-to-back poster made, I need to question your love of action movies.
When the trailer for Violent Night came out, not even talking about Silent Night, I'm just talking about Violent Night. My tweet said, did I direct this? Because it was so up my alley. It's like a movie I would make if given the budget. So yeah, big fan of that movie. I'm probably going to be a huge fan of this next one.
Ah, very cool. Well, I like Benny have kind of a love-hate relationship with John Woo. And a lot of like his like 90s action movies, I enjoy just for the pure nostalgia of it. But some of them just don't age well, and you know, they're of the time, but still, like, I'm excited to see him do something different. I'm excited to see Joel Kinnaman kick a little ass on Christmas. Next one, and this is just kind of a little fun thing that I discovered that I was gonna ask you guys if you've participated in. If you haven't, I'd throw it out to you guys and to the rest of the audience. But Five Nights at Freddy's is gonna be coming out relatively soon. And they have a fun promotion where you can actually call into a hotline and apply to be the night guardsman. And if you haven't done it, it's a ton of fun. You can dial the number 1-833-578-0158 and literally apply to be the night guardsman at the Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria. And it's just a fun little bit of advertisement. Again, I'm probably not going to see this movie because if you don't know by now, I'm a huge chicken when it comes to horror movies. I might see this one because I played the game, even though this game scared the shit out of me when I did play this. But I think that this is a brilliant little marketing ploy. It reminds me of when The Disaster Artist came out. They had a phone number you could call and you could kind of enter, like, digitally interact with Tommy Wiseau on it. I think at the time it was Franco, but I always think it's fun when they come up with creative ways to be able to market this. Have either of you two called this number?
No, but I've done stuff like it in the past. Like there's been several movies where it's like, call this phone number. Like Super Mario Brothers did it recently.
Yep.
Where they had to add a fake commercial and you call the number. And it's basically just signing up for like their newsletter notifications. In LA, they had like an actual plumber's truck going around, and they basically, if you're around it, you can go get some merch for free, you know, swag, whatever. So yeah, I've done stuff like that in the past, but I have not done it for this film yet.
Benny, how about you, buddy?
I have not. I am curious about it now that you mentioned it.
I would suggest giving it a shot. It's interesting because the whole like application process is kind of fun once you call in. So my little pitch to you guys, but we'll finish out our movie news with this. Now that the writers and actor strikes is seeming to come to an end, thank God for that. Blumhouse CEO Jason Blum recently came out last week and said that now that the strike is coming to an end, he is promising that the next feature that Blumhouse is going to be focusing on is a Spawn reboot. Nice. That will be coming out by 2025. Now, if you guys remember the original Spawn with Michael J. White, Martin Sheen, Oscar-winning actor Martin Sheen, and John Leguizamo as the Violator, was cool when it came out, has not aged well at all. What do you guys think about a Spawn reboot, and especially by Blumhouse, which is primarily a horror studio? Benny, your thoughts on that one, buddy?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Benny.
We keep kicking off with you, man.
I know. I'm sorry. I like to butt in too much.
I think it's a good match. Like, one of the reasons that I think the Spawn movie in the 90s didn't work so well is they tended to lean more into the action fantasy realm as opposed to the sheer horror of it. So I think if you really focused on making it a scary movie that just had some superhero elements mixed in, as opposed to the inverse, I think you could have something that's really special. Right now, like, we're on the sort of the tail end of the superhero bubble, and we're dead in the middle of the horror bubble. So finding something that's primarily horror, but still has that superhero spiced in there, I think they could have something special. And Blumhouse has a pretty decent track record of, you know, making solid horror movies. So I'm all for it.
JT, take it away.
Yeah, Spawn is one of my favorite comic book characters. I was not one of those kids who would go to the comic book shop and pick up the new issue every week until Spawn came out. Spawn was like my kind of like my gateway into comic books. I always loved X-Men. I always loved Spider-Man because, you know, they kind of transcend just regular comic books. But man, those Spawn comics were like the thing of the time when I was a kid. And they were very R-rated, very graphic, very violent. And as you know, a teenage kid or a middle schooler, it was the best thing ever. I just loved it. I love the concept. I mean, the art in those comic books kind of revolutionized the way art is shown in comic books. And then that movie came out and I was disgusted because it was, they felt like they were making like a PG-13 Marvel movie. And that's not what Spawn is at all. Go watch the HBO animated series. It has violence, graphic violence. It has cartoon nudity. Like, it is very dark. It's like, basically think of Batman the animated series, but R-rated and very violent. That's what Spawn cartoon was for me as a kid. And it's highly regarded. Keith David was the voice back in the day. So good. And I think one thing people think about when you think about the movie they did in the 90s, it was supposed to be a big summer blockbuster. And that's not really what Spawn is. It's a character study of somebody who's put in this horrible situation. The characters around him are just as interesting as Spawn himself. So Blumhouse, go in with a small budget, make it hard R, very dramatic, very violent. And I think Todd McFarlane has said in interviews, Spawn is not really the main character in this movie. He is almost like the shark in Jaws. He is something that everybody else in the movie has to deal with. And he is this presence throughout the film that anytime he shows up, dread, you know, darkness. Like, it's something that he kind of like, everything happens around him, apparently. I don't know if he changed the script at all, because Todd McFarlane, I think for a while, was going to direct this Blumhouse film. I don't know if that's still the key. Jamie Foxx was rumored to be attached for a while there. But yeah, I'm really excited for this movie because I think going low budget and hard R is the way to go about it. And I think Tom McFarlane learned everything what not to do with the 90s film and is going to apply it to this film.
I think this is the perfect blending of the right studio getting the right property. Look, Blumhouse has done an incredible job of investing very little into the movies and getting huge returns. Their horror movies are generally really, really good. And I believe that Jason Blum is going to be more hands-on. This is kind of going to be one of his like major IPs. I think that he's going to get his hands on. And the whole comic, the whole character of Spawn, it is a horror comic. It really is. I mean, listen, the guy is wearing enchanted armor from the devil. He fights demon Spawn. Like, it is very, very much a horrific style movie. And I'm 100% in agreement with you, JT. Small budget. Invest what you need to invest to make it look good, but don't go over the top with the CGI and make this a hard R horror movie. That's the way that Spawn should be. And I honestly think that Blumhouse is going to do this justice. So when I read this story, I was like, I have to include this because there's been so many talks for so many years. I mean, I think the Spawn movie was what, 1997, 1996? Right. It's like The Crow. For the last like 25 years, there's been a new Crow. There's been a new Spawn coming. But I think the right studio has the right property, and I think we're going to get a great movie out of this.
Just don't let David Gordon Green direct it. I don't know why, but he seems to have a contract with them where he's like, anytime they're going to direct a new horror franchise, we're bringing it back.
Yeah, let's keep Danny McBride and David Gordon Green away from this property, please. But folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to discuss our favorite AIs and or killer machines and or robots in movies. Plus, we have a very, very special guest coming up. Our very good friend Amanda Sidoris is going to be coming on to chop it up with JT regarding Saw X. Stay tuned, folks.
Polaroid asked me, Sinbad, and these supermodels to demonstrate the sleek, stylish Captiva camera. It holds the pictures inside the camera's special pocket till you take them out and put them in your pocket. My pocket. The Polaroid Captiva.
A true knockout. One of the rare sequels that truly measures up.
Just do what you do.
Alien 3 rips the lid off total terror once and for all.
This thing is really ticked off!
Has to die.
The mother of all monster movies is back. Sigourney Weaver, Alien 3.
Are you up to it?
Rated R.
Welcome back, folks. And now, our review of Saw X. And with us, we have a very special guest, Amanda Sidoris, who is a huge horror fan, a personal friend of mine, and has seen every one of the Saw movies. She's that crazy, but we want to welcome her on the Extra Movie Butter podcast. Amanda, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for paying the money to go see 2xX, or also known as Saw X, in theaters. Directed by, now I was trying to pronounce this before we went live, Kevin Gurtert, who JT had mentioned, I guess, was an editor and writer on some of the previous Saw installments.
Yeah, I believe he directed part 6 also. I'm not sure if he wrote, but he definitely edited them. So he basically knows how to shoot one of these movies. And I think he's been somebody that's been with the franchise for a long time. So they were just like, you know, this guy, he's had his hands in it for a while. Let's give him another film, which shows a lot of faith in him.
Now, I got to ask this question to both of you. Now, I saw the first Saw movie, but beyond that, I really had no interest to continue the story. And that's just, again, because I'm a very big chicken when it comes to horror. Do you consider this horror? Like, is this scary to put yourselves in? So are these considered horror movies? And is like Halloween time the right time to release these movies?
Take it away,
Amanda.
Amanda,
I'll toss it to you.
For myself, I usually do call it a horror film just because of the level of gore that's usually in these. However, the reason I personally like them is it's more the psychological. So I would say this is more of like a psychological thriller or psychological horror, because they always have like a really good twist behind most of them. And that's how I rate my favorite ones, is whatever one has the best twist. But because there is that level of gore, I would say some people would consider it horror. So yeah, I'd say Halloween is a great time to watch it. I like to watch a different scary movie every day in October. But I would say if you're, you know, a horror fan, I'd say give it a shot any time of year.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know what? They are horror movies, but you know, just like every genre, there's subgenres. You know, comedy, there's the mockumentary, there's, you know, the Dumb and Dumber type movies, and there's movies like Best in Show, and this is just falls into that kind of torture porn, gore fest kind of horror film. Although I will say the Saw series does at times throughout the series and throughout the movies go for a more suspenseful, like, who's that outside my window kind of take. You know, that's where the whole pig mask comes into play. So, and I will say this, I'm not the biggest fan of the Saw series. I like the first two films, and then it becomes so insanely complicated the way things are all. It felt like to me, like by part 3, 4, and 5, like they're making it up as they go. I don't feel like there was a roadmap for how everything is connected. It's like, okay, we made this movie, we got to make it connect with the next one. Let's try to figure it out. It's kind of like that Charlie Day meme where it's like all the boards are on the wall and he's just like flinging his arms around. Like, how's it all connected? I feel like there wasn't really a map or a plan. They just kind of went as they went along, they came up with some. It's crazy. Go watch a video. I saw a video before I saw this new film, which was like a recap of all the previous films. And halfway through, my nose started to bleed because I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was like, what is happening? My brain can't handle how many connections, how many surprises, how many twists, how many turns. I was like a roller coaster on Six Flags. It was insane.
So let's jump into your guys's non-spoiler. And then, of course, I'm going to ask you guys to spoil the shit out of this movie. But non-spoiler review, is the creepy weirdo Tobin Bell back in this one? I'm assuming he's probably the lead in the movie, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Amanda, we'll turn it over to you as our guest. Non-spoiler thoughts. Did you like it? Was it worth a worthy entry? Should this franchise continue to move on?
So as I said previously, I feel there's different ways you can look at the movies and what's more important to you. So I think every Saw movie, personally, I break it down to four pillars. It's the plot, it's the traps, it's the gore, and it's the twist. Some of them do a great job at all four. Some do a great job at one and not the others. For me, this entry, I say, did a great job at the plot. They really brought back like an actual story and not just a bunch of gore. And that was about it for me. I didn't really like the traps. I didn't think they were really that inventive or creative. There was, for me, there was no twist. I saw what was coming really early on. There was nothing to shock me at the end. I did like that they actually pulled back on the gore, though. I really feel like compared to the last, you know, five entries, this one actually pulled back on it. And it wasn't just blood all over the place just for the sake of it. So I would say that the entry was good, but it wasn't great. It was a little better than the last few, but it was just okay.
JT, how about you? Are we going to need to put you and Amanda in an escape room together and see who survives? What's going on? What's your thoughts on this
movie? I'm horrible at escape rooms. I've done a couple. You don't want me in there with you. Let me just say that right now. I thought it was better than above average, but not great. I think maybe has one of the best setups of all the other films. Like, I think the first half of this movie, I was much more into it than I was the second half. I really like the setup. I really like Tobin Bell. And like, they actually, you understand, you know, people that are put into these traps throughout the films, it's like this weird twisted fantasy he has in his head of putting people in these certain situations so they will look at life a different way. That's not so much the case, I feel like, with the people in this movie. It's more of a revenge tale. And it's kind of like one of those movies where you're like, oh, these people deserve what's about to happen to them. And so for that way, more than the other films, I'm kind of on Tobin's side. And I'm like, yeah, let's go get these mofos. And I do agree, the traps were okay. They weren't as good as some of the classic films. They weren't as inventive. They seemed a little bit more unimaginative, I guess is the word I would say. So I thought great first half of the film, second half not so good, but not horrible. My biggest issue is this movie's 2 hours long. No Saw movie needs to be 2 hours long. Get me out of there in 90 minutes, maybe hour 40. 2 hours, by 2 hours, I was ready to leave. And if this was if they cut this down to 90 minutes, I think it would be a stronger film.
So this is the big question. There are 10 movies in the sequential timeline, and then there's the spinoff, right, directed by Chris Rock. So there's 11 movies in there's 11 movies in this franchise now. Are we done? Should we sit on this for a little while and explore this in another 7 to 10 years?
So it's a little bit of a, you know, a tough question to answer because as a fan of the series, you always want another one to come out and you hope that it's going to be that amazing entry into the franchise again. But based off of the handful that they've given us that are not so great, I would say if they're going to keep up with exactly what they're doing, then they need to just cut their losses now. But if they can actually bring it back to like the original trilogy, because I always say the original trilogy, it could be a standalone trilogy and it would be amazing. And I would watch those three, you know, multiple times. Like GTE said, from there on, this story just gets ridiculous. And they just keep adding more characters and doing flashbacks. And guess what? This character was here all along, but you just didn't know it until now. And I do think that's actually another reason why some people probably liked this new one, like why it has such great, you know, actually good reviews and stuff right now from critics, is because the story was pretty linear and there was nothing hard to follow along. It was like from the beginning to the end, you knew exactly what was going on and there was no confusion. So I would say, I know that was a long way to get to my answer. I would say if they can bring it back and really bring back like the genius of the original three, I would watch five more. But they really need to fix what they're doing if they're going to bring back more.
Yeah, this one's a flashback. So this one takes place before a lot of the sequels. It takes place probably between two and three, I guess. I'm not even sure where the timeline, don't even get me started. But anyway, so you kind of lose all that heavy baggage. I don't know how you would do another film, because would it be another flashback? Would it be a new generation, someone else taking up the mantle, which has already happened several times? So will they probably do it? Yeah, because this movie's making money. It got some of the best reviews of the franchise. So there's no doubt they'll figure out a way to make another one. Whether it'll be good, that's, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I'm not – absolutely, there'll be another Saw movie. There's no way another Saw movie's not going to happen.
Do we ever get the Scooby-Doo Saw crossover?
Oh.
Where Jigsaw and Fred are matching trap wits.
Oh. I don't want to see what happened to Scooby in that movie.
Benny, if I had all the money in the world, buddy, I would put it all on that movie. That's a brilliant pitch. Okay, last question for you two before we go into your spoiler review. If there are no more Saw movies, does Tobin Bell get work?
Yeah, I could see him getting some, you know, small roles in some other B horror movies. It's like Freddy Krueger. That guy has appeared in so many other horror films just because he played Freddy Krueger. He could ride that horror, you know, wave until he'll show up at those horror conventions and sign autographs, and he'll show up in B horror movies for one or two scenes just to get that paycheck and be like, hey, it's the guy from Saw. So yeah, he'll be fine.
I don't think he'll get the work he deserves, because I actually really like him as an actor. I think he could do great movies and go into like actually dramatic, you know, movies and stuff. But unfortunately, he's been typecast now for way too many years. I mean, the series started like 2004. It's 20 years, you know, he's not, like JT said, he is now just going to be in B horror films. So he will get work, but not the work he deserves.
Well, keep an eye out, folks, on the Sci-Fi Network. We'll see Sharktopus 3, where Tobin Bell is the mad scientist that created the Sharktopus. Now, JT and Amanda, let's go into spoiler territories. What worked for you guys? What didn't work for you guys? What did you love about this movie? What just didn't work? Amanda, I'll go to you.
Okay, so spoilers. There really weren't, like I said, I was not shocked, and that's what kind of bummed me out with the main characters, Cecilia and Parker. Parker was supposed to have been a innocent person himself, and there was no surprise that he wasn't. I was not shocked when he all of a sudden turned on them and revealed he was there to break out Cecilia. It just did not catch me off guard whatsoever, so that kind of bummed me out. A couple of things I thought were kind of cool, though, was I loved that this Saw movie had a mid-credit scene. Loved that.
Oh, good. I don't know if I stayed for it. What was it?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So the mid-credit scene, it was the original guy that got Tobin Bell, like convinced him that the surgery worked for him.
Yes. Okay. I did see it. Okay.
You did see it. Okay. Good. I was like, you missed that.
Yes. Continue.
So I thought that was pretty cool that they actually added a mid-credit scene. So it kind of sets it up, you know, for a possibility. And they introduced, you know, they saw Hoffman there. So you knew that he started out as an apprentice that soon. So that was a pretty cool surprise at the very end, because you just weren't expecting that. But as far as, the twist, it was not doing anything for me. I'm kind of thinking that maybe they can do something. I didn't want to say it earlier because we weren't supposed to say spoilers. When you're asking if they'll do any movies in the future, I am kind of thinking they could jump ahead since next year is the 20th anniversary. They could jump ahead and take the kid that was in this, Diego, and have him be the new person setting traps because he experienced this in such formative years. He might have been affected by this, and then he goes on and creates traps himself. Or there's also a first victim, Diego, that we never saw what happened once he got free. So I'm thinking he might be like the new Amanda, where he actually broke free from the trap. And so he might be the new apprentice, you know, coming up. The problem is that because this was supposed to be between the first and the second, you, like JT said, you either kind of have to, you know, jump ahead or keep continuing like within the original trilogy time line. So that's the spoiler that I wanted to say earlier about the possibility of creating new Saws in the future.
Yeah. Again, the premise to me, this movie is so, it was the best premise for the opening of a Saw movie. He basically has cancer. He has a tumor. And he goes to Mexico to these people who have this new experimental surgery, and it all turns out to be this giant scam, which I just think that is a great way to put us in his shoes and actually be like, holy crap, these people deserve what's about to happen to them. It reminded me of the Jim Carrey movie, Man on the Moon. There's a scene towards the end of that film where he's dying of cancer and he goes to Mexico about this healer who pulls the cancer out of you, and he sees that it's just he's just putting like some dead like chicken guts, and he's just pulling it out of his palm. And it's literally like that, but on like a whole nother level of a scam. It's just, these people have done horrible things. And I feel like in the other films, you were told that some of the people that were in those traps did horrible things, but this time you get to see them actually do it and actually take advantage of these people who are literally on their deathbed. And it's not even that they're taking their money, it's that they're giving them hope. You're telling people that they're about to die, that they're going to live, and they're going to be able to cure them of this horrible disease. And to me, that is just so crushing, which also goes into why I think the second half is kind of weak, because the whole thing takes place in this one warehouse. And I started feeling to myself, man, I just want to get out of this warehouse. All these people are lined up with these traps. They are still pretty gruesome. You know, they're definitely gory. But I don't know. I just felt like after a while, after the whole second half of the movie, an hour spent in this one warehouse. And it kind of, I started getting a little cabin fever. Like some of the older Saw movies, they jump from location to location. You don't know where you are at times. And this one felt a little stagnant just being stuck in that one location. So that kind of hurt a little bit for me. The twist, yeah, I agree. I don't think anybody didn't see a twist coming. It's like Saw 101. The only time they tricked me in the past was because I didn't know what the hell was going on anyway. Because I was like, the movies were so complicated. I was like, who's who? What? Okay, fine. It's like the bellboy from Saw 3 turns out to be the killer part 6 or something. It's the most like smallest character could turn out to be the killer. So I enjoyed it because it was streamlined. It wasn't trying to be, you know, all over the place and try to fit in to all the other movies. It really is just kind of a good revenge movie that just also happens to be a Saw movie.
Another thing that kind of going off what you're saying about like later on in the movie is one more problem that I kind of had was that the way it wrapped up and ended with, you know, the bad guys, Cecilia and Parker that were left, it didn't make sense for John Kramer to be able to predict exactly what was going to happen to get them to be in the situation they needed to be in. He does say like, okay, so the plan didn't go exactly how we, you know, planned it out, but it still worked. So I assume there was a couple changes that in his, you know, strategy, it was supposed to be different, but it still just didn't make sense. Like how he was supposed to have just predicted every single action of these characters when there were so many things that could have gone differently. So that was another problem I kind of had, was I was like, you did not know they were going to end up in this exact situation. They kind of went off of their greed and just kind of depended on the greed for them to end up in the room to steal the money. But other than that, I just really kind of had a problem with, you know, just so much assumption of him just knowing his victims.
I think you both kind of touched on the fact that this movie might be a little too long, a little too much involved in it, right? So shorten it down. And is this movie at 90 minutes a much better movie than what you guys experienced?
I think so. Yeah. I think it dragged. 2 hours is too long for these movies, especially because it was in one location. Maybe if the movie kind of jumped around a little bit more, I wouldn't have felt so, you know, stuck in this one location. But it literally, the second half of this movie all takes place in a warehouse. And the original Saw basically takes place for the most part in this one room. That movie is shorter, and I don't know, it was more engaged than I was in this movie.
But going off of what you said about the first one, it's not just still in that one room, though. That's exactly, yeah. I'm going exactly with what you're saying. Like, I'm agreeing 100% that yeah. even though, like, the setting originally takes place in that room, they do jump out of the room and go to right. other characters in the situations they're in at currently or in the past. And I agree with you 100%. This one had no, like, there was nothing outside of this room. And so it kind of just got a little stagnant.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're both in agreement that if they continue to be able to, to JT's point, they're going to put out more movies because these movies make money. But secondly, if they advance the story a little bit, get a little more creative, I mean, would a studio like Blumhouse do well with a franchise like Saw? Like, we just talked about Blumhouse taking over the Spawn franchise. What about a low-budget Saw movie directed by the Blumhouse?
This is Lionsgate, so yeah, Blumhouse doesn't have anything to do with it.
I know, but
I almost assumed that Blumhouse was producing at this point. I mean, James Wan's the producer. You know, he's the one who directed the original. I think it should stay in his hands, just because he's okay. the one who started the whole thing, and he knows horror, man. I really like his horror films. Even when he did Malignant, I was a huge fan of that movie. It was very campy and fun. You know, maybe one day James Wan will be like, let me jump in and do one of these Saws again. It's been a while. I feel like, you know, after Aquaman and The Lost Kingdom, he might want to go back to his horror roots. And maybe instead of doing Conjuring, he'll do a little Saw movie.
Oh, that would be fun.
I love Blumhouse Productions, but I don't think Saw belongs in it. I think Blumhouse Productions, the way they do their movies or their horror films is it's very, like, it can be campy or it can be really like the border of like comedic. And I don't think Saw ever needs to go in that direction. And so I don't really think it would work well under Blumhouse Productions.
I like the idea of James Wan coming back in. While I don't enjoy the Saw franchise, I very much enjoyed the first one. Hey, James Wan, you know that Aquaman and The Lost Kingdom is going to be a terrible movie. You know it is. Go back to your horror roots. Direct Saw X1. Well, final thoughts, guys. Saw franchise, I mean, 11 movies in at this point in time. I think not having seen them, but just reading some of the reviews of some of the past ones, there's been some stinkers. And I would venture to say that there's maybe 3 to 4 good movies in this franchise that I think keep the people coming back to this particular franchise. Would another one strike up a new trilogy? Would a good one, let's say directed by James Wan, you think continue to advance this trilogy, keep it going?
I think it could for sure. But personally, I don't want it to, if that makes sense.
Yep.
After the original trilogy, I just kind of think it's just individual movies taking it what it is. I don't think it needs to create a whole brand new trilogy. Because unfortunately, I just don't think any Saw movie from here is going to be good enough to need two more after that. So I just think they should just keep making them independently and hope that they finally have a winner.
Yeah. Listen, I don't love these movies. I'm not like the hugest fan of this series. I like the first two films. I think those are my two favorite of all the movies. And like I said, it just got too convoluted for me after that. This was a little refreshing for me. I think it's one of the better films because you really don't need to see any of the other films to jump into this film. Someone who never saw Saw could jump into this movie, and you might not know what every character's backstory is, but there's enough there for you to just be like, oh, this is a good revenge tale. If they were going to make another one, I don't really know where they would go with it. I just think I almost want to say, you know, it should be almost like a spinoff, but they tried that with Spiral. They kind of did with Jigsaw, and neither worked, in my opinion. So they went back to the well with Tobin Bell, and it worked. So I don't know where you go from here. If they didn't make another one, I'd be fine.
Can I just point out that you just did use the term saw-saw?
Saw-saw. Yes.
I think we can all agree, though, the writer's room for these movies has got to be a bunch of sick, twisted individuals to come up with all of these different torture and disembowelment mechanisms has definitely got to be a disturbing room. But we are going to move on to our next review, which is of the creator. But we do want to thank our guest, Amanda. She goes by the Hammer, Sidoris. We're so glad that you came on. I know you're a fan of this. I know you're a fan of the horror movies. You mentioned you watch a different movie, every single horror movie, every single day of Halloween. I'm curious, and I think our listeners are too, what's your favorite of all of those?
So it's really hard to say my favorite of, you know, a single movie, but I will say one of my favorite ones to watch around Halloween time itself is Trick or Treat.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Just a campy little like B movie. And I just love it. I love the premise. I love that it takes place on Halloween night. And it's just a really fun one because I can go on and list a bunch of actual, you know, true horror films that are quality movies that I enjoy. But I would say that is my favorite one to watch every Halloween.
I recently lost a bet to Benny in that his Bengals beat my Rams, and I am now required to watch the movie Cobwebs, which both JT and Benny have spoken very highly of. Have you seen that one?
I actually have not, but I will have to go and put it on my list now.
I was going to say, we should put that one on our list and have a conversation about it, but I will be watching that one before our next show. Well, Amanda, thank you so much. Is there anything you would like to pitch, promote, plug?
I wish I had some stuff to promote on here. I really don't. I don't do too much on social media or like YouTube. So it was just actually a real pleasure to be on here and just join you guys. Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. I do hope to be invited back on sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, we need a good horror aficionado on this show because JT is our action guy. Benny's our 90s guy. I'm the nerd. So we need to add a little horror into the mix, but we're so grateful to have you. And yeah, absolutely. You're welcome back on the show at any time.
Thank you.
Bye, Amanda. Have a good day.
Bye, you too.
At my school, you can't make mistakes. I get hungry, I reach for Snickers.
Roasted peanuts, milk chocolate, caramel. Snickers satisfies.
Abandoned as a child.
I want to find out who I am by finding my parents.
Now he unleashes his rage, determined to overtake Gotham by destroying its greatest hero. Michael Keaton.
What do you want?
Danny DeVito.
You don't really think you'll win, do you?
Michelle Pfeiffer. Batman Returns, June 19th. Directed by Tim Burton. Rated PG-13.
Now back to our show, folks. And again, I have to praise JTE for being just the brilliant marketing strategist that he is and getting these sponsors that we get on this show. Folks, they really do. Like, they pad our pockets. I kid you not. It's incredible. But on to our review of The Creator, directed by Gareth Edwards, who directed, in my opinion, the greatest Star Wars movie that is Rogue One. Also, one of the better Godzilla movies in the Godzilla movie with Aaron Taylor Johnson and, I don't know, the Scarlet Walter Witch.
White? Oh, I thought you were going to say Walter White. Yeah.
Oh, and Walter White, yeah, and Bryan Cranston. Elizabeth Olsen, Bryan Cranston. But Gareth Edwards, not a lot of movies under his belt. His last movie that he actually directed was Rogue One, which if you kind of count movies and timelines, it's a bit older. So it's a bit of a span before he's dipped his feet back into this world. Now, we talked about it in the first one. This is a movie about artificial intelligence versus humans. And I'll kick off a little bit and just say that the cinematography in this movie, and I touched on this in the first segment, the cinematography and the CGI in this movie were absolutely stunning. It was hard to believe that this movie was made on an $80 million budget. And I look at a movie like Ant-Man and the Wasp, which had tripled that budget, and the CGI looked so terrible. So I'm just throwing that out there. If you want a visually striking movie, if you're into visual movies, if you're a visual movie approach and you want to be able to see good CGI, this is worth your money. That's my small little pitch for promoting this movie. I very much enjoyed this movie. I think it's hard to come up with original science fiction content. And while this is borrowing from a lot of different science fiction properties, and the idea of AI versus mankind is not an original property. We have seen it and we have done it very much times. We're in the middle of kind of a AI versus mankind mini battle right now in real life. But overall, I think the scope of this movie was, and I know I keep touching on the cinematography, but it is striking. And I very much enjoyed this movie. I thought the concept of this movie, yes, it's been played, but it really kind of centers down to like a father-daughter type movie. The father, played by John David Washington, son of Denzel Washington, who I disagree a little bit with a previous statement. I think the dude can hold his own. I think that he's a star in and of his own self. Tenet, maybe not his best movie. Black Klansman, that dude carried that movie. That movie was great. So I like John David Washington. I like that he's getting a little more big. I mean, I don't know if this is a big budget movie, but it should have been looked at like a big budget movie. It should have had big budget returns. I'd like to see John David Washington in a tentpole franchise of some sort, or to be able to start a tentpole franchise. I said it before, it would be fun to do a Equalizer prequels with John David Washington playing his father's role in those movies. I think that would be a lot of fun. But this movie stars John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Allison Janney, who is my favorite part of the movie, and Ken Watanabe. And then the introduction of, this is her first movie role, of the small little AI girl named Alfie or Alfo. And she was played by Madeline Voilis. And you would not be able to tell that this was the first movie that she ever acted in. I thought she was absolutely incredible. She stole the movie for me. And I think that, I mean, as far as child actor performances goes, this has to be at least discussed in the top five of all time. Wow. I'm throwing this out there. This year was a lot of just repeats, sequels, redos, entries into overly bloated and exhausted franchises. So there was just so much of unoriginal content that it was refreshing for me to see something original. And I think the creator was something original. So I very much enjoyed this movie. Now, I know Benny has a difference of opinion, so I'm going to throw it over to him. Benny, I think you saw this movie today, if I'm not mistaken.
I saw it last night. And okay. Whereas Rogue Two, The Saddening, is not a bad movie. I don't feel that it is in any way original. This literally feels like a movie that I've watched 58 times. And it's beautifully done. The performances are good. Everything technical about it is great. But the story is just really not interesting. There are little pieces of The Terminator. There are little pieces of Rogue One. But everything in this movie feels like it's cobbled together from a couple of movies you've seen a lot. So it's like every beat felt like, okay, I know this song. Here's what's coming next. And so whereas everything is well done, and I'm not going to say it's a bad movie, it's a fine movie. I wouldn't even complain about watching it again. But it is very uninteresting to me. The story is, anyway. And that's usually what drives a movie for me, is the story. Is like the reason that like Blade Runner and things like that, you know, people don't go out to see them, is they're dour and they're slow and you can see what's happening 1,000 miles away. And that's what this movie was on its downside.
Fair enough. JT?
Yeah, this is a movie I really wrestled with as I was watching it, and I still wrestled with a little bit after I saw it. There are things to absolutely love about this movie as far as visuals, just the filmmaking on display, yet I never connected to any of the human or robot characters in the film, and therefore it felt emotionally hollow is the word I would probably use, much like the robots. The AI had more soul in this movie than this actual movie had. I do agree with Benny. There was a lot of familiar tropes, but the movie also does a lot of creative new things in its technology and in some of its ideas. But the issue is they'll show something interesting, but they never really grapple with it or really dig into it. Like, some really interesting stuff happens in this movie, or there are questions I would have coming out of the movie that I feel like the film had no interest in even asking or really getting into. I feel like it's a script issue. I feel like John David Washington didn't really capture me as a leading actor in this film. His character's name in Tenet is Protagonist. I think you could just carry that over right into this movie. He's a protagonist, kind of just does what the script needs him to do. I don't understand his motivations throughout the film, especially in the beginning and more towards the end. We'll get into that in spoilers. It's a movie that I've just covered my ears and looked at what was on the screen. I was like, this movie looks amazing. But once I open my, I take the earmuffs off and I hear the dialogue and I see where the story's actually going and the character motivations, a lot of it doesn't make sense. A lot of it feels hollow. I felt like there were times where I was supposed to have an emotional reaction and I didn't. So, and I think that just becomes, I didn't connect to any of the characters. That's what it came down to. I really wrestled with it because it looks so freaking amazing. It's so cool in some of the things it's introducing. Yet, if I don't care about the characters that are in those situations, it's hard to care about the movie.
Fair enough. We're going to jump right into spoilers on this one because I think that there's a lot that I'm going to have to defend here. Let's just kick off into spoilers. Like,
let's go.
What starts the war between humans and artificial intelligence is somewhere in the not too distant future from where we are currently. We integrate artificial intelligence into almost everything that we're doing. And what ends up happening is a nuclear detonation occurs over Los Angeles, California. What does that mean, folks? That your beloved JTE and Moose Haas are both off of this planet.
We're gone.
We're gone. That leaves it in the hands of Benny Hamlin to be able to take the lead against artificial intelligence in the fight for humanity.
Yeah,
that's basically where this movie starts. And you learn further down the line that the detonation over Los Angeles was a human error. It was not an AI error. However, that's not revealed till much later into the movie. So this conflict over an artificial intelligence detonating a nuclear device over Los Angeles and killing millions basically is the match strike that starts this war between humans and AI. Now, most of the AI at this point in time has moved on to what is now called New Asia, which is obviously in the Orient, which is where a lot of this movie takes place. It has that kind of flair throughout the entire movie. And John David Washington, at the start of this movie, you believe that he's just living with his wife in the AI community. However, he's an undercover agent. There's a lot of very twists and turns and deceits and reveals in this movie that I do think it keep it very interesting and keep the movie progressing. But it's not too far-fetched in that the humans would have a spy inside of the AI colonies, right? John David Washington's wife, played by Gemma Chan, is killed. And in the process of trying to defend mankind creates the Death Star. That was the Nomad system is basically my biggest argument with this movie. The Nomad system is this giant Death Star-like contraption that exists above Earth that can issue strikes anywhere on Earth based on human commands. So I did feel that was a little borrowed from other movies. You saw it kind of in like Elysium had something similar to that. Gareth Edwards directed Rogue One, which is the creation of the Death Star. I was kind of like, okay, so you basically made a second Death Star, dude. However, as the movie progresses, John David Washington learns that the secret weapon that the AI has created is actually a little girl that is based on the embryo of what would have been his daughter of his deceased wife.
Why they never, and they never explain why. Why does she need an embryo? Why does she use the embryo? Why does, like, all other robots in this movie aren't created from embryos? They're just robots. And this is, I'm getting back to the point where the movie introduces things but never explores why or what the meaning was.
Yeah.
What is different about her than, say, Ken Watanabe? What? Except for, why did she have to create it from embryo? Only to me, is only used as a device to get us to connect, have him care about her more than he would have if she was just a robot. But my biggest issue with this movie is I didn't feel the relationship between those two characters, John David Washington and the little girl, at any point really was developed well, or I felt like they actually cared for each other. I watched movies like The Iron Giant and Logan, and by the end of those movies, I feel the connection between those two characters. I felt no connection between him and the little girl in this film. The only reason he likes her is because she's a child. Therefore, I like her, unlike all the other robots who I don't really care and will kill at the drop of a hat. So these are things that I feel like things are introduced, but they're not developed.
Benny, how about you? Let's talk about that, because I disagree. I actually think the relationship between the two worked quite well. So Benny, John David Washington and Madeline Voilis, she played the Alfie O. So Joshua and Alfie O, the two kind of main characters of this movie. Was there a relationship developed there? Did it not work for you? Take it away, dude.
I thought the actors did fine together. Like I thought, like I said, I thought the performances were great. Like the little girl really sold the emotion. And I understand like why he eventually became focused on the kid, because like after his, the robot is essentially has the skin of his dead child, you know, mask on top of it is essentially what they're saying. But I also don't think that they gave enough time to explain why he cares, you know, why that touches him so much and changes his opinion on it. But
that happens very late in the movie. Ben.
Yeah, like, it does.
That reveals towards the very end. So the whole movie before that, when they're together, I don't think there's any real bond being developed there.
I agree that could have been moved a little bit earlier, so you understood like why he had the attachment. They don't really do a good job of explaining why he doesn't just shoot the kid when he first finds it.
I mean, let me ask you this question. AI or not, could you guys just walk into a room and shoot a little kid?
If it was a robot, absolutely.
He says it in the beginning of this movie. And I agree with you, Benny, because his character in the beginning of this movie is shown to be undercover and falls in love with one of the scientists who, you know, the main girl, that his wife, who he impregnates. She is with the robots. He is living amongst the robots. In any other movie like Dance with Wolves, The Last Samurai, that character becomes on the side of the robots. He becomes and learns that they're actually do have emotions and thought and are not just AI. Yet when those cops show up, he is ready to turn on those robots in a drop of a hat. He goes right back to the mission. There's a point where a guy almost kills a dog and he doesn't blink. I thought there was going to be a moment there where he's going to be like, hey, put the dog down. Like, show us like a little bit of a heroic moment there, or that he has some sort of compassion. No, not even for a second. That guy killed that dog in front of that lady. He wouldn't even cared. So for him not to kill that kid the second he realizes it's the weapon felt untrue to the movie to me. I was like, okay, it's a kid, but at the same time, he's popping people off left and right and turning. You don't have to kill the robots. You just have to hit a switch. You can turn them off. He just does it without any case. He doesn't seem to have any sort of moral, like, you know, conflict. He's not conflicted at all. And yet, because it's a kid, now he's conflicted. It doesn't seem to set up with the rest of the character that we've gotten to know up to that point.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
And I think another reason is this is one of the movies where I watch and I was kind of actively rooting for the villains. And maybe that's just a personal thing is I think machines have done nothing but destroyed humanity. So I was kind of hoping the Marines or whatever was just going to off everybody. Like I was really hoping Allison Janney's character would win. Her motivation that the machines killed my kids, I'm going to go kill all these machines. That made perfect sense to me. I guess everyone else's motivation I was a little bit suspicious of.
Well, let's talk about Allison Janney in this movie. She plays the character of Howell. She was my favorite part of the movie. Yes, you learn later on that she harbors this incredible like prejudice against the artificial intelligence because she lost two of her sons. And one of her sons was tortured like for hours and hours and hours by the opposing side of this war, the artificial intelligence. And Allison Janney is usually, even in roles like I, Tonya, where she's very despicable, she's still likable. In this movie, she casts all that to the side, and she is just a despicable part of this movie, and it works so well for me. My opinion, I loved, like I said, she's the best part of this movie for me, and I like Allison Janney a lot. I rooted for her throughout the years. And so this is one of my favorite roles that she's taken on. Your guys' thoughts on Allison Janney in this movie?
Go ahead, Betty.
I think she's the hero of the movie, and I enjoyed her character. here is the thing, though, is like the entire, I guess, twist that they're trying to put on the thing is that AI is not the villain and can develop souls. Well, the fact that the AI is willing to torture her kid and willing to blow her up proves that AI is perfectly willing to kill a human being. And that they are our enemy. So, like, her character proves the flawed logic of the movie as a whole. But in the end, like, she does a great job. And normally, this is not a character that she plays. Like, she's very, I don't know of another time where she has played a character like this, like a tough, hard-boiled military person. So it's not in her wheelhouse, and she did a really good job with it. So I agree with you. I'm a fan of her performance. And I like the character. I just wish the character had killed everyone else in the movie.
Fair enough, JT. Wow.
Yeah, I think she did a great job with what she was tasked to do in this movie. Somebody who's been, you know, kind of broken by the war is no nonsense. Is just there to win the war. That's all she's there to do. She's going to do whatever she has to do it. And I think she does a great job because she's a great actress. And I understand Benny, you know, kind of siding with her a little bit because I don't think the movie does a good job of explaining why the AI has become like worthy of being processed as something with like, you know, a soul in a lot of ways. Look at the movie Blade Runner. Rutger Hauer is the villain of that movie because he doesn't want to die and wants to live because he has an expiration date. And in the rest of the whole movie, you see him as kind of the villain. But by the end of that movie, when Rutger Hauer gives that famous speech on the roof about the things that he sees and how he just wants to live, I understood why that robot deserved to live and why that robot wanted to live and did everything he could to try to survive. There's nothing in this movie that gave me reason to side with the AI and why they need to be, you know, why are they like humans? Why is it just the word they keep using throughout this movie is it's just programming. There's a great scene at the beginning of the movie where a robot wakes up when they're cleaning the site of the nuclear attack. And he starts saying, "Where's my wife? Where's my kid?" And it's a robot. And the lady freaks out, and John David Washington says, "Hey, it's just programming. Don't worry, relax." And I was hoping the movie at some point would try to explain a little bit why AI has become self-aware and like why it doesn't want to die and why, but there's just never that moment. I guess you're supposed to feel that when you're just living with Ken Watanabe and they're working along with people and they're protecting themselves against the Americans. I get it. I just don't think the movie's script did a good job of establishing like why we should care about the AI and why they should be trusted. And the human error thing was very frustrating to me because it's one line in the movie where Ken Watanabe goes, you know, it was human error because of the nuke. that's all they dedicated to the whole movie was that one line. I was like, what do you mean it was just human error? Let's find out about that. Or how interesting would it be for the Americans to find that out and have to wrestle with that? But it's a one line that changes the whole context of the movie. Because we're to believe at that point that AI had attacked us and then basically blew up LA. But no, it was human error. I was like, that changes everything in this movie. And yet it's a throwaway line while they're on the beach, Doc talking at one point. So again, I think the script is where this movie fails in a lot of ways. But man, the movie's so damn awesome looking that you kind of forgive it in a lot of ways because you're on such a good ride.
Well, here's where I'm going to defend that. Because listen, the whole idea behind AI is that you're creating a consciousness that doesn't know right from wrong. You're just creating a consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. And much like children or bosses, mentors, whoever, you learn throughout the actions of others. So the concept of like the artificial intelligence growing like to the point where they don't want to be killed and have to like defend themselves. They're defending themselves because they're under attack. They've learned to be able to have those types of different traits from mankind. Now, please understand, I'm not defending AI in real life. This is just my understanding of this movie, is that the robots and the artificial intelligence, the reason why they show compassion, the reason why they show their soul, the reason why they show aggression is because they learn from their makers, the creator, hence the title of the movie. The creator is mankind. They're learning from mankind. They're trying to mimic mankind's actions because they don't know better. They're just a singular consciousness that basically has to learn right from wrong through example. Now, if you're a consciousness and you've done nothing wrong and all of a sudden you're being persecuted, you're going to go on the defensive a little bit, right? Because your creators have done the same thing. They've gone on the defensive. You think that mankind would take responsibility for destroying Los Angeles, for killing JTE and Moose? Absolutely not. Mankind would not accept responsibility for murdering the beloved personalities of JTE and Moose Haas. And so it comes down to the fact that the AI is basically mimicking their creators, right? They're learning from their actions. And then as they learn, they create their own opinions, their own thoughts of it. They don't want to be the aggressive force, right? They're basically just trying to live at this point in time. They're almost like at this point, they have just a small corner of the world where they're welcome. Everywhere else in the world, they're destroyed completely. And so this small corner of the world is where they are welcome. So they fortify it and they basically learn to become almost like pacifists. I mean, they're pretty aggressive pacifists, let's be honest. But like that's kind of my defense in that. In the one line that it was a human error, yes, it does change the whole concept of the movie. But I actually think that it's in a good way because it does lend a little bit of sympathy towards the AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, in the history of mankind, there has been so many different prejudices, so many different races that have been experience prejudice and mass executions. And this kind of just touches, I think, on that. Now, the subject of it being AI versus like a race of man, you know, does make it a little bit different. And it may, especially again, nowadays when the world is so anti-AI and we're a little fearful of what it's going to become. That being said, I do think that this handled that brilliantly. And I think the relationship between John David Washington, look, I think every parent knows what their child is going to look like. And so I think he instinctually knew that Alfie was kind of a clone of his daughter, whether he can put his finger on it and whether he couldn't put his finger on it. I'm not a parent, but I own a dog. I'd be able to pick my puppy, my Darby, out of a lineup any day of the week, whether he was a puppy, whether he was a child or not. I'd be able to be like, that's my old ass bulldog. So I do think that there's a little bit of like parental instinction that comes into it.
Okay.
And that's the reason why he doesn't immediately kill it. But I will say, like, that's my defense of kind of the script and the AI portion of it. is you got to learn from the creator, right? And the creator in this particular case is mankind.
Your defense and explanation, I thought, made so much sense, but I feel like the movie didn't present that.
Like,
everything you said is like something you're bringing to the movie, or you're coming away. It's almost like everything you just said, I wish they put that much thought and care and actually showed it in the movie. Because I was like, yeah, everything you're saying makes sense, and that would really work in this movie. How did the movie show that? I don't really think they did a really good job of doing that.
That's fair. That's fair.
I agree. Like, in the end, I think it gave you the ambiance of like a really dark character study of AI, but then it didn't really commit to the intellectual exploration of it.
Exactly. I agree with Betty on that one.
It was dark. I will admit that. And like, when you're seeing mass like robots like beg for their life, like it, there were parts of this movie, that were very like hard to watch. And made it very, very dark. Yes, very much so.
Suicide robots, man. Yeah, it's suicide bomber robots. I was like, damn.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. There's some really cool concepts presented in this movie, like this, the suicide bomber robots. The fact that they, you know, when someone dies, they have a few minutes to grab some of their consciousness through like a hard drive. I was like, there's some really cool sci-fi elements and ideas throughout the movie. And that's one reason why I did, you know, I didn't hate my time in the theater. I was very, because every once in a while, a really cool idea was presented and it looks amazing. At the end of the day, like a robot, while it walks and talks like a human, at the end of the day, it just didn't have any soul for me.
That's fair.
Yeah. And despite how negative I said, this is one of those things where it's not a bad movie. It's a decent movie. It's just that it's one of those movies you see the potential. And you're judging it against its own potential. And so it's, on its right, it's an okay movie. But you saw that somewhere in there was a great movie to be had.
I agree with that,
I'm with you on that. Maybe that's what I'm seeing on this. Because look, let's be honest. The last probably 10 movies that we've watched and reviewed for this podcast, aside from Barbie and Oppenheimer, were just okay. Like, you know, come on, Expendables. Like, that movie was terrible. Fast X, that movie was terrible.
we had to have something good in there. What was probably the best? Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to think what our movies actually. The Haunting of Venice was meh. Yeah, it's tough. Fast X.
We should do an end of the year review of our favorite. But Equalizer 3 was.
Mission Impossible 7 was pretty awesome.
Okay, I like Mission Impossible. Yeah.
I thought Mission Impossible was. And we all kind of like The Flash.
I loved Rise of the Beast.
Yeah, I liked Rise of the Beast too. But and you guys love Blue Beetle. I was the odd man out on Blue Beetle. But you guys really like that one.
Well, let's finish this. And then I have a fun idea for us. Because we didn't get the extra movie butter that we normally get in segment number two. So I have a fun idea where we throw our favorite AI and or robots into movies. But let's wrap up. Benny, overall, your thoughts, final thoughts on The Creator.
I think The Creator is a good movie that is going to have a strong cult following. The same people that love Blade Runner 2049, these really beautiful sci-fi dour movies, they're going to love this movie just like that. If you're going out because you want to see Independence Day or a really upbeat sci-fi action movie, this isn't it. But it's not a bad movie. It's a beautiful movie, but you know, it is what it is. If you love Blade Runner, you'll like this. If you don't, you won't.
Fair. JT?
Yeah, listen, I think one thing he has proven, Gareth Edwards, is that he's a visual master. I think this movie looks amazing. I felt the same way about Godzilla. I felt the same way about Rogue One. There are moments in that movie that are just beautiful. Beautiful cinematography, beautiful shot composition that stick with me. The scene in Godzilla where they jump out of the plane and at one point you're going through the lenses of the, you know, the skydiver as they're going towards Godzilla with the red smoke. Then it goes to a wide shot of the smoke stream. There is like some, you know, goosebump inducing moments in all his films just from a visual standpoint. Unfortunately, I just think, I don't know. I just don't think he's gotten the right material as far as script. And I think he does struggle with the human characters in his movies. Rogue One's probably the best one, but as we all know, Tony Gilroy came in and worked on that movie quite a bit. And we don't know what he fixed. We don't know what he did, but my guess is probably he came in for the more of the character moments. Because even in Godzilla, while visually stunning, like I just said, the character of Antonio Johnson is kind of a dud. Bryan Cranston is the best thing in that movie, and you lose him about 20 minutes in. The human characters are the last thing I think about when I come out of Godzilla and this movie, honestly. Like, I think the human characters fail to live up to the vision of his actual technical merits. So I'm not giving up on Gareth Edwards. Whatever he does next, I will go see. I just hope, you know, maybe he's able to eventually figure out the more human element and is able to write better characters in a lot of ways, because I do think he's a visual master. And if you want to see a sci-fi film that looks just amazing, go check this out. I do think this should probably be seen on the big screen just because of those visuals. And just because I didn't connect with the relationship and some of the characters, you did, Moose. So I think some people will actually love this movie. And then some people like me will be like, visually stunning, but couldn't connect with the characters.
JT touched on it. Gareth Edwards has his own style. It's been displayed. It is a beautiful style of filming. And you know what? I will agree with you that maybe he lacks in the character development. Look, Rogue One, Gareth Edwards had the balls to put a Rebel Alliance versus Stormtrooper battle on like a tropical beach. It was so I want to go vacation on Scarif. Like, it was awesome. he has a style and a flair, and it works very, very well and is visually stunning. This movie worked for me. It didn't leave me I didn't leave the theater like in an existential crisis about, you know, AI versus machines, but it did leave me thinking a little bit. And I feel like the good, mark of a science fiction movie gets you remembering the movie and makes you think a little bit about the premise. And this one did that for me, mixed in with some good action sequences, mixed in with Allison Janney being just a badass in this movie. It worked for me. At the moment, it's not my favorite of the year, but it's going to make probably my top five of the year for sure.
Wow.
We've had to watch a lot of stinkers this year.
Has it been a great year? Yeah.
It has not been like a knockout year for movies. But
the fall is coming, and we got Fincher, we got Scorsese, we got Ridley Scott, we got a lot of big hitters coming. So I'm curious to see where it lands on your list by the end of the year.
I am too, because I'm excited for what we have coming up. And I agree. Like, listen, we're getting into Oscar movie season, so we always get some good hitters coming up. And who knows, maybe we'll get like a Hocus Pocus 3 mixed in there here in the next couple of weeks. But I do have a fun idea. And I know we all love to nominate our favorite movies. So let's talk a little bit as we wrap the maybe next 10 minutes about our favorite either A, robot movies, or B, AI in movies. So, of course, we have to go. If we're going to talk about our favorites, we have to go to Benny, because he's going to pull out probably Johnny Five or Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey. But Benny, I'm going to throw it over to you, buddy. Favorite AI and or robot movies?
So, actually, when I was looking up like lists of movies about robots and AI, I discovered that I really do not enjoy a lot of movies about robots and AI at all. So I do like Short Circuits because, you know, actually, strangely, I like Short Circuit 2 a little better than the original.
Sure.
But again, they're not movies, even though I really like them and I have a sense of nostalgia to them, they're not something that I watch very frequently. So I figured I'd throw out a couple of robot movies that I do like, some of them that you may not have heard of, that would be worth watching. Since I threw some shade at Van Damme earlier, I would like to throw out the 1989 true Van Damme classic Cyborg, where he is battling half human, half androids in a martial art battles in an apocalyptic wasteland. It's low budget, it's cheesy, but it's Van Damme at his peak doing what he was meant to do.
Doesn't that have Jack Palance in it?
Oh man, I would have to
guess. Jack Palance was in Cyborg 2.
Oh, okay, okay. Jack Palance, who Dan's also looked like person. My grandfather, Denzel Goforth. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh my God, he lives a spinning image of my grandfather.
Yeah, Cyborg, the first film, Van Damme is the only person of note. I don't think anyone else. But okay. Jack Palance starred in Cyborg 2.
Got it. Okay.
And then this movie, it's a terrible movie. It's excruciatingly a bad movie. But it was made in the 80s, and it's called RoboJocks. And a lot of the modern movies that you see about like kaijus and large robots, things like that, this was made 40 years before those movies and without the modern CGI. And for what they're able to achieve with what they had at the time, it's really interesting. But it's fun to watch it just to see where movies like Pacific Rim and things like that eventually went, you know, because it's like a great great grandfather to those kind of movies.
Robot, can I just add Robot Jocks? If you're gonna do a double feature, yeah. Benny, do you remember the movie Arena?
Oh yes, Horn, the world champion Horn. Yes,
if you're gonna do a double feature, Robo Jocks and Arena.
Absolutely.
Look up the trailer. Good call.
Once again, folks, I apologize for movies no one has ever heard of, but apparently we have a double feature throwdown. If you're going to accept that, please instant message one of us, comment on our reviews. Let us know your thoughts of the double feature of, I'm sorry, RoboJocks and The Arena.
I think it's just Arena. I'll have to double check, but I think it's just Arena.
And you are looking for the, I want to say it's like the early 90s that was released, actually. I always thought it was 80s.
Oh, maybe 1991.
Yeah, but it's, I think it's early 90s. But there are a lot of movies with that title. You're looking for the one that was released around 1990, 91.
Yeah.
All right. The challenge has been issued, listeners. Please let one of the three of us know or respond or comment on our podcast. And please let us know if you have accepted this challenge and if you enjoyed it. Benny, I'm sorry. I feel like you had one more you wanted to throw out.
Real quick, Benny. It was 1989.
Arena. 1989. Okay.
There you go. Go ahead, Benny. 1989,
Arena. You know, actually, I think that other than going into like the big hits, like the Star Wars and Rise of the Beast, like, things that have been very mass IP, there's not really a lot of robot movies, you know, that I find personally endearing. Like the original RoboCop to me is probably the best cyborg robot movie. Like I'm not a big fan of the sequel. I'm not a fan of really any of the remake, but the original RoboCop is a world-class movie. So if you've not seen it, it's definitely worth watching. It's very part of its time, but even like how the robots and things look in that movie hold up really well for 40 years old now.
You didn't like RoboCop 2? Irvin Kershner directed RoboCop 2.
I mean, it's all right
with Ed 2000.
It's not a terrible movie, but I thought it was a step down from the original one.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, the original is the perfect movie, so anything you do is going to be a step down. So I understand where Ben is coming from, but I still enjoy RoboCop 2. I can have fun with it. You know what? I'm going to put a movie out there that's not so much a robot, but it's about AI. It's only a few years old, and I feel like, you know, it's kind of a cult hit now. Have either of you guys seen Upgrade?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think Upgrade's that's great. Awesome movie, man. Basically, a chip is put in his brain, and he basically an operating system takes over and allows him to fight really good and do all these things. It feels a little bit like Paul Verhoeven movie in a lot of ways. You're just talking about RoboCop, and it has that kind of Paul Verhoeven vibe, because at times it's really funny and really gruesome, and it's a really cool sci-fi film that deals with an operating AI system that enters a guy's brain and that can control his body. So if that one slipped through the cracks, I highly recommend you checking out Upgrade. I think it's awesome.
I watched half of that movie before I realized that wasn't Henry Cavill.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I seriously thought it was Henry Cavill. I was like, oh, hey, good for him doing a low budget movie. Dude, Upgrade's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Upgrade is awesome. And the last one I'll do another AI film. I think Her, directed by Spike Jonze, is a great film that really deals with AI becoming self-aware. And it's a really great sci-fi premise that has so much emotion, so much heartbreak. And you really do come to see the AI as a true character. And I think Spike Jonze is such a creative and visionary director. And I think that's another great film. If you're just talking about AI and how it could kind of become self-aware, I think that's an amazing film. Joaquin Phoenix, amazing performance. It was one of my favorite movies the year it came out. It was like one of my top three movies of the year. So it's one I need to revisit. It's been a while, but I love that film. Very different from Upgrade, but two very, really good films. I feel like aren't mentioned as much as they should be.
I agree. I had her on my list. I think Ex Machina is a solid, solid AI movie. You have Alicia Vikander. She won her Academy Award for that movie. You have Domhnall Gleeson. God damn it. Who played Pope? Oh, Oscar Isaac. I have Ex Machina down for as one of my AI movies. Of course, you have to mention the Terminator franchise. I understand that there is a lot of stinkers in those movies, but listen, the original and Terminator 2 are classics. Some of the greatest movies ever made. I will defend Terminator Dark Fate. I enjoyed Dark Fate quite a bit, but the original two Terminator movies, all-time greatest classics. Yes, of course, the Star Wars franchise. Benny, you kind of alluded to that. Yeah, and here's what I'll give Garrett Edwards credit for as well. He created my favorite droid from the Star Wars franchise. I mean, a lot of people look at like a C-3PO, R2-D2, but dude, K2SO.
K2SO, man.
Rogue One, voiced by Alan Tudyk.
I'll take him over.
That's the droid, people.
I'll take him over BB-8 every day of the week.
Every day of the week. I mean, look, the original Matrix movie basically was the eternal war between mankind and artificial intelligence. You can't deny how great that movie was. I mentioned it earlier, 2001, A Space Odyssey. My sleeper, so I have two sleepers. One is the movie Moon by Duncan Jones.
Oh, because of the AI computer?
The AI computer is basically what keeps recloning him every few years.
Who voiced him?
Sam Rockwell's. I think it was Bryan Cranston.
I think it's Kevin Spacey.
Oh shit, you might be right. It might be the devil himself.
It's Kevin okay. Spacey, but it's just a voice.
But the movie Moon, he's still the devil. I don't know. I enjoyed that movie quite a bit. I like Sam Rockwell a lot. Again, he's another one of those guys I root for a lot. And this was kind of just basically Sam Rockwell and a machine the whole movie. And then last but not least, folks, let's not forget the little cleaning robot himself. That is WALL-E. That is the greatest animated movie of all time.
Wow. That's a statement. Hey, you know what?
Indirect statement, but it is a statement.
I mentioned this earlier, and I'll throw it back out there since you're saying WALL-E's the best. Iron Giant, great film about and something that was supposed to be a weapon and learns to love and have a relationship with this kid. I love the Iron Giant. It's just a great movie. I also want to throw out one last, and this is not a great movie, but I don't think it's a horrible movie. And it's and I thought about it quite a lot while watching The Creator. And that would be Will Smith's I, Robot.
I knew you were going to throw that out.
It's a fun summer movie that is dealing with a lot of stuff the creator's doing. Obviously, it's not as impressive and it's not as... You know what? 5 years from now, I bet if I had to pick, I probably would go to I, Robot before The Creator. Because at least I'm going to have a little bit more fun. Because The Creator, while visually stunning, I wouldn't quite call it fun. And I can watch I, Robot and have some fun with it. So I had to throw it out there.
I take Batteries Not Included over them both.
Oh, that's a good one too.
I will say that iRobot strikes a deep chord with Benny. He once lost a Smowdown match to a guy who gave the answer of I am Robot and somehow got it correct. Just saying.
Wow. That's disgusting.
Well, folks, whether you believe in AI, robots, aliens, Bigfoot, or the Loch Ness, we are just happy and accept you all and are thrilled that you're listening to the Extra Movie Butter podcast. And of course, please tune in every week. It's the three of us. We have a good time. We're grateful to Amanda Sidoras for having been on the show earlier today. She obviously loves her horror movies. I've not seen Trick or Treat. I'm scared to check it out because I think I might crap my pants, but I will on the behalf of Amanda being our guest today. We want to thank her for being on there. Benny, JT, any final words for the folks at home before we call it a night?
You know, be nice to your Roomba, because you never know. It might come self-aware one day. Who knows what it'll do to you. So treat that Roomba with some love.
Yes, don't fall in love with machines. They're not really capable of love.
I think we'll end with that statement, that machines will always break your hearts. Good night, everybody. See you next week.